Attention passengers, this is your captain speaking. Brace for impact. This is Tom Lewis. In my book, Brace for Impact, I gave you the big picture about the beginning of the crash of the industrial age. Here, on The Daily Impact, we chronicle the downward spiral. As someone who spent a decade researching and writing about the Civil War, I am distressed when it's discussed in what passes for civil discourse these days as if it were a simplistic comic book story with superheroes on one side, arch-villains on the other, nothing in between, nothing to think about here. Perhaps you will not agree with me that to understand a civil war or any war, one must go beyond the reasons given by the leaders who initiated it. If you do not agree, then you must believe we went to war in Iraq to save the world from Saddam's weapons of mass destruction, and I wish you well. If you believe that thousands of young men in Minnesota, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, and such states voluntarily, at the beginning of the war, the draft came later, left their homes, flocked to their county seats, elected their colonels, and marched south hundreds of miles to fight and die only in order to abolish slavery, then I have a slightly used bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. If you believe that Confederate soldiers on the verge of starvation, ill-equipped and supplied in the face of the Union's overwhelming strategic advantages, fought on past all expectations only because they wanted to preserve slavery, then the price for that bridge just went up. Those who oversimplify the past are condemned to repeat it because they oversimplify the present, too, and haven't a clue about what's going on around them. Let me bring up a few things other than slavery that we must be aware of if we want to grasp what happened to this country in the 1860s before it happens to us again. Here's something almost everyone has forgotten about that time. If today you ask a resident of Europe where she is from, she will never say, "I'm a citizen of the European Union." She will say, "I'm French or Spanish or whatever." She'll name her country. Similarly, if in 1861 you asked an American, "Where are you from?" it would not have occurred to him to say the United States. He would have said Virginia or Ohio. Northerner or Southerner, his nationality, his identity, was defined by his state, and whatever patriotic allegiance he felt was toward that state. Attitudes toward the federal government differed north to south. In both, people were acutely aware that America was, as Lincoln phrased it, the last best hope of Earth, because it was the only place on the planet where ordinary people could buy and hold land as a right, not at the pleasure of a monarch, to whom they either paid rent forever or from whom they got a land as a reward for service. In the North, the Union was seen as a great enabler of growth, settlement, industrialization, and prosperity. In the South, it was more of a nuisance, imposing taxes, regulations, and restrictions on the only two things that created wealth in the South, tobacco and cotton. When the South threatened secession, it threatened the survival of the Union, and it was that threat that brought the farm boys and factory workers of the North swarming into the recruiting stations. When the North marched troops into the South, it invaded the countries to which the people of the South had sworn allegiance, and it was to defend against that invasion that the farm boys and grocery store clerks of the South swarmed their recruiting stations. Remember that Virginia, East and West together, voted resoundingly against secession and remained opposed until Lincoln marched troops through Virginia to retake Fort Sumter. Most ordinary people in the South did not see secession as a rebellion against their country so much as a defense of their country. By the way, it's fashionable these days to call all who fought for the Confederacy traitors. a technical point. Every one of them was unconditionally and without reservation pardoned by President Andrew Johnson in 1868. I bring these things up not to diminish the role of slavery in the war, but simply to remind that there were other considerations in play, some of which were more meaningful in the minds of ordinary people. One of the most powerful and least recognized after-effects of the war was that the phrase "the United States," which has always been plural, had always been plural in common usage, became and remained singular. It became one country. It's no accident that the principal inscription in the magnificent Lincoln Memorial in Washington honors him for saving the Union. It was a complicated business. Oversimplifying the past does no service to the present. To keep up with the ways our industrial world is falling apart, subscribe to the Daily Impact. To better understand them, the second edition paperback edition of Brace for Impact is now available at Amazon.com. For now, this is Tom Lewis saying, brace for impact.